From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, beautiful people? Hopefully you all had a great weekend. Man, it was a pretty good weekend for all you sports fans out there in the state of Michigan. Michigan State getting a big win over Wyoming. The Lions putting it to the Jets. The Detroit Tigers winning the AL Central. U of M. Okay. Maybe there was one blunder in the world of Michigan sports, and we'll talk about all of that and so much more. And you'll also get to hear from one of the most beloved sports journalists from right here in the state of Michigan. Yes, Jamel Hill. As I got to sit down with Jamel as she was named as the Grand Marshal of MSU Homecoming. Man, oh man, she is an unbelievable sports mind, folks. You'll get to hear a little bit of my chat on today's show. We'll also bring you weekend winners and also take your calls. So you don't want to miss any of that. But hey, before we get to all of that, as custom here on the show, here's my man Jock DeWitt with your current sports quick hit headliners for this September 29th.
I'm Jack DeWitt, and this is your current sports quick hit headliners for Monday, September 29th. Michigan State topped Wyoming 56-14 on Saturday, moving to 3-1 on the season. Jeremy Langford had his first 100 rushing yard game of the season, and Michigan State will take on Nebraska this Saturday at 8 p.m. The Tigers beat the Twins 3-0 last night to win the AL Central. Next, the Tigers will be traveling to Baltimore to take on the Orioles in a best-of-five ALDS series. Detroit finished the season 90-72. The Detroit Lions are now 3-1 following a win over the New York Jets yesterday. Quarterback Matthew Stafford finished the game 24-34 for 293 yards and three touchdowns, with one coming on the ground. The Wolverines dropped their game to the Golden Gophers on Saturday, losing 30-14. This is just the second time in 24 meetings that the Golden Gophers have defeated Michigan. Michigan is now 2-3 on the season. The University of Notre Dame moved to 4-0 after downing Syracuse 31-15. The Irish will be taking on the Stanford Cardinal this Saturday in a top 15 showdown in South Bend at 3:30. Former MSU football players Benny Fowler, Darquez Dennard, and Drew Stanton return to East Lansing this weekend for MSU's annual homecoming game. In a pregame press conference, former Spartan and current Arizona Cardinal quarterback Drew Stanton said, "It is a special thing to wear the green and white." The number 16-ranked Spartan men's soccer team tied Rutgers 0-0 on Sunday, while the women's team lost to Michigan 2-1 on Saturday. ESPN has reported that defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh is interested in leaving Detroit this offseason for New York, whether it be the Giants or the Jets. The Lions and Suh have agreed to put off talks until the end of the season. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Time to send it back to Al.
Right, thanks a lot, Jock. Appreciate it, my man. Again, our phone lines are now open, folks. If you want to call in and talk about any of the weekend sporting action that took place, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKR or at the official Current Sports Twitter page of WKAR_sports. Well, so much to get to, folks. As I previously stated before we began the show, you'll get to hear my sit down with Jamel Hill. Jamel is actually a Michigan State University alumni who got her degree in journalism. She's worked at the Detroit Free Press, the Lansing State Journal. Even the state news here on campus has gone on to do some great things. She is now working for the worldwide leader in the world of sports. That's right, ESPN, where she is the co-host of the national show Numbers Never Lie, along with Michael Smith. She was actually on campus on Friday because she was, throughout the entire weekend, to be honest with you guys, because she was named as the Grand Marshal for Michigan State Homecoming. She walked in the homecoming parade. She did a lot of media obligations, and she found some time out of her busy schedule while here in East Lansing to sit down with me on Current Sports TV. It was a fantastic taping. I want to send out a very heartfelt thanks to all of you who showed up. We had about 90 people pack into Studio F on the first floor of the WKAR-TV studios here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building. A packed show. It was a fun time as I sat down with Jamel for actually a little bit over an hour. Her time was so gracious. It was a great time sitting with her. So you'll get to hear a snippet of that interview during our second segment of today's show. But man, oh man, do we have a full plate to get to before we get to that interview. Alex Sharg now joins me, the man behind the glass. How you doing, my man, Alex?
Pretty good, man. Good to see you back in the driver's seat after your Friday off.
And yeah.
Yeah, what a weekend to be a Detroit sports fan if you see your Tigers and your Lions winning. I mean, aside from the Red Wings also lost over the weekend.
Yeah, but it's preseason, right?
Yeah, but, you know, it's good to see some early signs of how they'll do.
Yeah.
And a lot of question marks over in Hockey Town. So you get a little bit of jet lag each way. So
definitely, but you held it down on Friday, my man. How'd the show go?
Actually, I had a whole lineup of things to talk about. I had Andrew Hazen, and we just got so into MSU and Michigan football, we couldn't even brush off college football.
Yeah.
So the whole show is basically college football, a little bit of pro. We skipped down at the end to about what happened in East Lansing with the NBA player, Jeffrey Taylor.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So we talked about that just for a hot second, but it was all football on Friday.
Well, I tell you what, today it's going to be a lot of football, seeing as though the Lions had a great outing. Michigan State also had a great outing. But we're going to get to Michigan in just a sec, because actually head coach of the Michigan Wolverines football team, Brady Hoke, just finished up addressing the media during his weekly media conference, in Ann Arbor. And he had some interesting things to say concerning a specific moment that has not only just the Big Ten and the world of college football talking, but just the entire nation talking about. But we'll get to that and Michigan's woes in just a sec. But hey, let's start with the good, shall we? Michigan State football, as you just heard from Jock DeWitt, the Spartans defeating Wyoming 56-14 on Saturday, moving to 3-1 on the season. Jeremy Langford had his first 100 rushing yard game in MSU's homecoming win over Wyoming. A great outing for Michigan State. And I tell you what, right now, Alex, this Michigan State football team, the offense more specifically, is certainly clicking on all cylinders. They look spectacular. 200-plus points, the most MSU has scored through their first four games. I mean, that's unbelievable. So the offense has certainly arrived. And you know what? It's certainly impressive in how they're doing it. Connor Cook, he looks so comfortable. I mean, and so confident. He had a few link-ups with Tony Lippett. Him and Tony Lippett, I mean, they're just making sweet music so far this season. They look as though, I mean, they're like Montana to Rice right now. I mean, it's unbelievable right now. But the offense right now, just harping on them right now, they look very, very good, Alex.
Yeah, and we actually talked all on Friday about how key it was for Langford to have 100-plus yards rushing. And because if you remember Jacksonville State, Al, he had a limpy knee a little bit. His knee wasn't doing too hot. He said he was 100% going into this game, but obviously it didn't matter. I thought that was the biggest part, was him establishing the running game, him being that lead back. You know, as much as MSU rotates their depth and they show that they have 3-4 solid backs that could get in the game, I think it was really crucial for Langford to really break out for some big runs, which he did.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you've seen Michigan State, especially through these past 2 weeks, really established that they definitely want to run the ball. You know, they want to run that power running game. Jeremy Langford, he's a guy who's a horse. You know, you can give him the ball, you know, multiple times throughout the game. And he definitely showed what he could do on Saturday. And, again, the offense, I mean, they scored on each of their first six possessions. I mean, it truly unbelievable. I believe they had a few turnovers in that game as well. They had a big blocked kick. I mean, Michigan State right now, they look good. But now I think we can put all the lollipops to bed as they now open Big Ten play against Nebraska on Saturday, a night game, 8 p.m. at home on the national stage. It's going to be a good litmus test to see where this team is right now playing a Big Ten foe in Nebraska, a team who many people feel as though could be one of the favorites in that Big Ten championship race as the season dwindles down. I mean, Nebraska has certainly been putting up a lot of points. But looking at the criticism of this MSU football team, if there are any at this point, it seems as though a lot of people are harping on that defense. Now, I thought D'Antonio, addressing the media after the game, I thought he harped on something that was pretty interesting, saying that he believes that many Spartan fans out there have been somewhat spoiled in the past when it comes to MSU defense, just looking at how talented they were. Guys like Max Bulla, Denikos Allen. I mean, we could go on and on and on about that MSU defense in years, last year being ranked number one in the nation. There were a few hiccups, I guess you could say, in the secondary on Saturday that led to a few touchdowns, or two touchdowns, I believe, for Wyoming, that had a lot of people scratching their head. Blown defensive assignments, specifically in the secondary. I believe R.J. Williamson had a tackle opportunity that he just missed. It seemed as though he may be on the hot seat as far as that secondary is concerned. But again, we don't really know. I want to say slow down for a lot of people who feel as though this defense isn't where it needs to be, because really we haven't really seen them other than Oregon play a team that, you know, is really formidable, if you will. So, but right now I am seeing right now, because there was a point in that game, I believe, Alex, where R.J. Williamson was actually substituted in that game. I believe not actually moments after that play where it was a big let go when he missed that tackle. So but right now I think it's too early to gauge exactly where this defense is. And I think D'Antonio, I liked how he came out and said, hey, we've definitely been spoiled in the past. You can hold them close to that standard, but not to the same standard as defenses in the past, especially last year.
Yeah, I was most shocked that they actually gave up a rushing touchdown in the last game. Can you remember the last time they gave up a rushing touchdown?
Never, right?
So, especially when Amir Abdullah comes to town, who's one of the best rushers in the Big Ten, 200-plus yards in that win that Nebraska had, that's going to be a big issue for Michigan State. And like you said, yeah, they don't have the defensive assets that they did last year. So it's hard to hold them to such a pedestal that they can be as dominant. So, yeah, the real test is when Amir Abdullah comes to town. I mean, that's the best running back they'll probably see all year, I would argue, Al.
Yeah, without a doubt. And looking at it, you know, I could see Michigan State and Nebraska as a shootout. I could definitely see that. If you're looking at it, you know, these are two offenses that average a combined 95.6 points and 1,087.6 yards per game. That's unbelievable. Nebraska seems to move the ball so far throughout this season very, very easily. Again, they haven't played a defense like Michigan State's just yet, but the way these two offenses are playing, I mean, you can see a high-scoring game when the primetime matchup under the lights on this Saturday. We'll see.
Yeah, now, you said at the beginning of the year that Nebraska would be the team that beats Michigan State. Do you still stand by that?
I stand by it. I am going with Nebraska in this game. I got to stick to my guns. If I make a prediction, I rarely go back on it. So if I said at the beginning of the year, I'm going to stick with it. I think Nebraska has been playing. They've been pretty impressive so far this season. But again,
but what
folks,
about Nebraska's defense?
Again, that's what I'm saying. If I was just about to mention McNeese State, I mean, this is a team that did struggle against McNeese State. Okay, so again, you got to take some of these matchups, a lot of these games so far throughout the first 4 weeks here, with a grain of salt, because they haven't played Big Ten competition just yet. Well, Michigan State hasn't played Big Ten competition just yet. It's going to be a great game, I think. One that has the potential to be somewhat like a 34 to 31 game. I could see that. I mean, very high scoring game, I think. But it's going to be a good litmus test to see where both of these squads are. Now, transitioning now, let's talk about this other team in Michigan, the Michigan Wolverines, who seem to me, Alex, to have hit rock bottom. I think it's safe to say that right now. And, you know, Brady Hoke, as I mentioned before we start this discussion, Brady Hoke did address the media today, and he's taken a lot of criticism due to one particular moment. Now, with the Wolverines down 30-7 in the fourth quarter to Minnesota on Saturday, Michigan quarterback Shane Morris took a shot to the head from Minnesota's Taron Cochran and appeared a little bit wobbly when he got up. Now, Hoke did leave Morris in the game for another play before replacing him with Devin Gardner. Shane got the start on Saturday as well. Now, Morris later re-entered the game when Gardner's helmet was knocked off. And when the game was over, he ultimately left the field on a cart, reportedly. So there were a lot of questions fired at Brady Hoke. I believe you listened to the presser as well, which happened, I believe, just moments before we took the air just now. And many people just kind of trying to harp on how could you leave Shane in the game, seeing as though, you know, he wasn't really evaluated and he seemed a bit wobbly and discombobulated when that hit took place. So if you know, a loss to Minnesota doesn't, you know, ring the alarm here and cause some controversy, you also have the sideshow in Brady Hoke leaving Shane Morris in the game, which totally, in my opinion, I mean, he shouldn't have been left in the game at all. I mean, he should have came out immediately, got evaluated to see if he had a concussion, and if so, he should not have played another down. So that's a whole other situation. But man, with all of this going on, seeing Brady Hoke after games and during his pressers now, he looks like a beaten, distraught man right now, Alex.
Yeah, he definitely looked beaten in the press conference that all of us back here, some of the students that and myself that just watched. But the real telling story out of it was there wasn't one question asked about their Rutgers game.
Not at
there
all.
There wasn't one question asked about what about the play against Minnesota. It was all about this concussion injury and talking to David Brandon and the lack of character from the coaches and from me.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because, yeah, this is a story. This is kind of eclipsing anything that the game can reveal or their upcoming matchup can reveal because it's getting so much attention. If I'm looking right now, and the incident has drawn attention from several news agencies, including ABC's Good Morning America. The ESPN crew's broadcasting team was talking about it this morning. I mean, everybody's talking about it. I mean, because, you know, concussions are such a sensitive topic in today's world of football now, seeing as though what we know from, you know, the NFL documentary that was put on PBS, the League of Denial to you know, kids and how it's being revealed with what we know with CTE now, it's a very, very touchy topic. And anytime you mishandle concussion protocol, if you will, with a player on a national scene here, Michigan and Minnesota, is going to get a lot of attention, and not to mention the fact that Brady Hoke is already on the hot seat. This doesn't bode well for him. So, yeah, I mean, it's getting a lot of attention at the end of the day.
Right. So, for me, I mean, that's troubling as a team because you're trying to move on to the next week's opponent, and he's just wasting his time out there for 30 minutes answering questions about hearsay, she say, and all that. So, definitely troubling in that aspect. Now, with the hit, I want to point out one aspect that everybody's pretty much ignoring if you look at Deadspin and Good Morning America and ESPN. Shane Morris wanted to stay in the game. And that's something that, if you watched it closely, he waved off about a sub coming in the game. He kind of shook his hand left to right saying, no, I'm all good. I'm going to stay in the game. So as much as, yeah, he could have had a concussion. Yeah, he could have had a serious injury. He shook off the injury. Now, I'm not saying that lightens the fact that Brady Hoke shouldn't have taken him out, because no matter what the player says, he might not know his own constraints. He might not know his own limitations and if he actually has a concussion or not. At the end of the day, you should have taken him out regardless if he said he was okay, but you got to lighten up a little bit because Shane Morris wanted to stay in the game.
Well, I see where you want to go with that, Alex, but at the end of the day,
it's not where I want to go. It's just the fact that he wanted to stay in the game.
At the end of the day, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
That's what I just said.
Exactly. That doesn't even aid in the discussion. I understand anybody who gets hit. I mean, look at the, you know, incidents that have happened in the past where there's a big hit. Yeah, of course, the player wants to stay in the game. He wants to continue. They're gladiators out there. That's how football players are. But being a coach and looking out for the well-being of your kids, I don't care if he wants to come out or not. You have to bring him out and take the necessary precautions to do so, and that's why he is under fire and getting all of these questions. Because like you said, I mean, that was most of the pressure. That was all of the pressure, really, talking about that one moment. So I understand he may have taken a hit and waved somebody off, but who cares? I don't care if you're waving. You're coming out the game.
It kind of reminds me of Friday Night Lights when Boobie Miles basically tears his ACL. It's done. He tries to stay in the game, and then he injures it even more. That's kind of like what I see here with Shane Morris, where he wants to stay in. You know, he's going to be that playmaker.
Yeah, I mean, what player, what doesn't? I've been multiple times when I'm playing high school ball. I may get injured. I'm trying to go still, you know. But at the end of the day, the coach and Hoke talked about it. You know, he said, hey, I have to, you know, I'm looking out for the well-being of my kids here, which he obviously didn't hear. But, you know, that's the goal. That's what a coach is supposed to do. I don't care what that player wants to do, if he wants to stay in the game or not. So, it's certainly a very heated discussion. We want you guys to weigh on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have a caller right now on line one, Michael from Saginaw. How you doing, Mike?
How you doing there?
Very well.
How you like your round? Jameel here was the homecoming parade, huh?
Y'all, she was cooler than the other side of the pillow, Mike. She was great. She was great.
Run away, girl, huh?
Yeah, she was good. She was, I tell you what, I mean, she is so knowledgeable. What really stuck out to me is how knowledgeable Jemele Hill is in all aspects of sports. I mean, it doesn't matter what you throw at her, she knows it and she does her research. She's unbelievable, Mike.
You know what, I like her on that show, not First Take, but the other one, you know.
Numbers
I
never
like
lie.
Her and Michael and Smith, man. I didn't know that show was there on Friday, man. Because
yeah,
I've been working. I work every day this time of the day now, Tuesday through Friday, so I don't get to watch daytime television. But what I want to talk about, this that was cool, and you talked about, but what they did to Shane Morris was criminal, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was really criminal, the way they set him up, and they treated him like that, man. You know what, man? I think Michigan, they suffering from a lack of leadership, man, because, they should have, somebody, the athletic director, should have went to that press conference and explained that, man. You don't just let the trainers or somebody, some authority that besides the coach explaining that. That's just like the Roger Goodall and Ray Rice situation, man. And I thought it was just criminal. You know what? I was more happy for Minnesota because they former coach Jerry Kill used to coach up here at Saginaw Valley.
Yeah, Kill, yep.
State University. And I was really happy for them. I would like to see a team like every now and then just to come up out of the ranks like a Minnesota or Purdue or Illinois, some team in the middle of a road team to get up and have their moment of glory, even Northwestern, you know. So.
Well, certainly Minnesota had that on Saturday, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you this before I get off
yeah.
the air. I don't know if you the Pistons having a training camp starting this Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and you think their team – you're going to talk about this later on. I know you are.
Oh, you know it. I'm probably the biggest Piston fan you're meeting in your life, Mike. You know that.
All right. But what I wanted you to talk about sometime is Andre Drummond is really going to bloom this year.
Without a doubt. I think Andre Drummond, especially, and again, Mike, thanks for your call. I think Andre Drummond, looking at how Andre Drummond was able to perform and even make the team. I didn't even think he'll make the team. There were many speculations out there that he wouldn't even make it. But to make the team for FIBA, I think, you know, playing with guys like the talent of, you know, Paul George, who I hope he gets better soon. He looks like he's going to miss the entire year. But, you know, Derrick Rose, the amount of talent that was on that team can bode well for any young star who's trying to develop their game. So I think him getting that experience and playing through really, you know, with him making a team, playing throughout the entire year is going to do miracles for his game. He's already a heck of an athlete, and this is going to take him to a next level. I think, you know, Andre Drummond is certainly going to be an all-star for this team next year. And we'll definitely be diving to the Pistons as they start their season with a preseason pretty soon here. Can't believe October starts in a few days here. But, yeah, but thanks a lot, Mike, for the call. And, you know, going back to his point about Michigan, I mean, saying it was criminal, I mean, that's how a lot of people feel right now, Alex. The student newspaper, you know, the Michigan Daily, called for Hoke to be fired due to the incident, saying, quote, Brady Hoke's actions were indefensible and we can no longer stand behind his employment at Michigan. I mean, it's really, really tough right now for anyone to make a case that Brady Hoke, on or off the field, for any of that reasons, but looking at this incident specifically, coupled with the fact that his team is not performing well at all, it's hard to make a case that Brady Hoke deserves to keep his job right now. And I know you talked about it, Alex. You believe that Brady Hoke will finish out the year, possibly, and then be let go. But, man, it's tough right now. This is a cringing season for this Michigan football team.
He's on molten lava right now. But at the end of the day, what does firing a coach mean to you do? I mean, you're giving up on the season. You're just getting into Big Ten play against the teams that actually matter with Michigan State, Ohio State. So for me, you don't let him go until the end of the year. And at the end of the day, Al, I mean, at his press conference, he couldn't even pronounce the injury that Chambers had. When he talked about the ankle injury, he said, "Oh, it was some a word that I can't really pronounce." Is what he tried to call the injury.
He's befuddled. He's befuddled right now. I mean, he's definitely sweating bullets up there. He's been sweating bullets ever since, you know, the beginning of this season, even on the brink of last year. So, I mean, right now he's a beaten man. It's just a matter of time now, I believe. Brady Hoke is going to be – he's not going to be the head coach of Michigan for much longer here.
And
we all know that.
The worst distraction out of this is he also said in his press conference that you'll have to talk to the medical staff. They have a statement coming out.
Yeah, so he deferred a lot.
He deferred and said, I don't know. This is what they told me, the medical staff. So he's kind of pushing the fault off him to his medical staff.
And with him deferring, it sort of makes him even look even worse because it makes him seem like he doesn't even know the situation. And he doesn't even know what's going on. You have to talk to them. I'm not going to make a statement on that. You know what I mean? It seems as though he just looks lost. And he is lost, frankly, to be honest with you.
And apparently he did talk to Shane Morris this morning or the night before, but he didn't say anything about a possible head injury. So it's not like when you talk to him, he sees all this coverage. He sees what everyone's asking him. It's not like he doesn't know that Shane Morris might have a head injury or he could have had some kind of head injury. Why wouldn't he ask Shane Morris when he saw him this morning, hey, man, did you have a head injury or how is your head feeling? Did you feel anything? He didn't talk about any of that in his press conference. So if anything, you're just putting the Michigan medical staff in risk, which is one of the best medical programs in the country. You're talking about U of M Medical School. So now you're kind of spiting them as well. That's
it looks bad as a whole. And Hoke is at the head of this whole thing. And to be honest, Dave Brandon as well. I think, I mean, with all this is taking place, with especially this incident right here, I think Dave Brandon, I mean, it's legitimate to ask the question if his days are numbered as well with Michigan. So we'll see. We'll see. And right now, you know, we didn't even get to talk about the game here before the first break. But, I mean, right now, just to capitalize the game really quick and get my thoughts on it, Michigan just looks terrible right now. Anytime... You know, looking at the defense, too, they allowed 373 yards to Minnesota. I mean, that's inexcusable. That's really inexcusable right now. I mean, and then you got the quarterback quandary with Devin Gardner and now Shane Morris. Shane got to start on Saturday, didn't look great. Devin Gardner hasn't looked great all year. I think he's overrated. I mean, this team right now has certainly, in my opinion, hit rock bottom. I don't know what their record's going to be at the end of the season, but I guarantee you, it's safe to say they won't be in the Big Ten competition talks whatsoever. So let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'm going to play a little bit of that Jemele Hill sit-down that Mike talked about, and I talked about at the beginning of the show. Jemele Hill, who is a national journalist for ESPN. You don't want to miss that, folks. We'll be right back. Ain't no valley low, ain't no river wide enough, baby. If you need me, call me. No matter where you are, no matter
how. Hi, it's John Moe, the host of Wits, a show on your radio. Wits is laughs.
The heights of funny that you didn't know you could climb to.
Conversation.
Let me melt in your mouth.
Songs and surprises.
I'm a rocket man.
And another thing, the word is astronaut, with some of the biggest names in comedy and music.
Saturdays at 1 and Sundays at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see.
Yeah, that's the question that a lot of people are asking about the Michigan football team right now. What's going on with Michigan right now? Again, folks, if you have anything that you want to comment on throughout this entire hour of Current Sports, we'll be taking your calls. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. On this Monday, Alex likes to call it Martis Monday. He's playing music, of course, from the great Marvin Gaye. And each and every Monday, the artist, the catch with this whole thing is, I love it because you know what the catch is. We call it Martis Monday because the artist that we play in and out of our breaks has to start with the letter M. So today is Marvin Gaye. But all right, let's dive into our guest for today's show. Now, you know, she is unbelievable, folks. Jemele Hill, she's a 1997 alumna of the College of Communication Arts and Sciences School of Journalism and served as this year's Michigan State Homecoming Grand Marshal. That's right, Jemele, you could see her. For those of you who went out to the parade this year, you saw her on the streets, you know, waving to different Michigan State fans and personnel as she rode in the car. Again, she's the Grand Marshal. She's unbelievable. She co-hosts ESPN2's Numbers Never Lie show along with Michael Smith. Hill and Smith also co-hosts the ESPN audio podcast, His and Hers, with Michael Smith and Jemele Hill. Jemele has done some great, great things since graduating. She was also a keynote speaker on Saturday at a luncheon that she was honored, along with Glenda Lewis of WXYZ, Channel 7 in Detroit. So, you know, Jemele, even with all the things that she had going on over this entire weekend, she found the time to sit down with me and chat, not only with me, but all of you who came out to the WKAR-TV studios on Friday to meet Jemele and to fire questions to be a part of our 12th man segment. It was great sitting down with her, and I had to first start off the interview by asking Jemele whether or not, you know, if ESPN was always the goal.
No, I never tried to work for ESPN. I never wanted to work for ESPN. I never wanted to do television, period. When I graduated from Michigan State, my entire focus was on being a print reporter for newspapers. I wanted to be a sports writer. My ultimate goal was actually to work for Sports Illustrated. And I think what you'll find throughout your career, particularly, you know, once you're sort of after that first job or second job, you would be surprised where your career takes you. And I just came along at a time where the media, the news media industry was one way, and then halfway through my career became something else. Mm-hmm. Then you saw it became more important to be on television and radio, and those multimedia opportunities were starting to open up. And quite honestly, the way I kind of jumped and got closer to this particular avenue was I took a columnist job at the Orlando Sentinel. And the reason I did it, I'm going to keep it real. I did it for money. I didn't really do it because
I'm about the Benjamin.
I mean, look, I did it for money. Most columnists and most newspapers, they have the senior writing positions. They make the most money. And I happened to notice there was this, you know, show, you may have heard of it, called Around the Horn.
I know that.
They were putting all columnists on there. So I just looked around and said, all the columnists are on TV, all the columnists are doing radio, and they're paying them all six figures, and they're making book deals. That's where the money is. And so I took the job in Orlando to be a sports columnist. And after that, my career path just changed dramatically because all of a sudden, I wasn't just a person reporting on stories. I became a brand unto myself.
Now, let's take a trip back in time real quick, Jamil. Now, you're from Detroit. Shout out to D-Town. Anybody from Detroit in here?
That's right.
All right. She went to Mumford High School,
Mumford
right?
High School.
Any Mumford in here? No? Nobody? Okay.
We're silent group.
But, you know, looking at, you know, going back in time to that moment, you know, going to Mumford, how did you get involved and interested, first of all, in covering sports?
Well, it started by my love of sports. Like, I was sort of the classic tomboy in my neighborhood. I played sports. I was always out there, you know, with the guys, like, hooping, playing football, playing baseball. Like, and I love to watch sports. I love to watch baseball in particular. And I know this is going to shock your audience, but there was actually a time that existed before the internet.
Really?
It really happened.
I don't know that.
And
okay.
So this was before the internet. And so if you wanted to keep up with your teams, you had to read the newspaper.
Okay.
And I started reading the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News, the sports sections every day because I was a big Tigers fan.
Right.
And so I wanted to find out what happened, who did what, reading the box scores. So that's how I got introduced to newspapers. And I get to high school, and they had a high school journalism course available. And I always used to write in my spare time short stories, creative writing. And I took high school journalism and covered sports, and the rest is kind of history. Like, it, once I started getting exposed to covering sports and writing about it, I was hooked. And I knew it was something that I wanted to do the rest of my life, because certainly I couldn't add. So really, the career path was limited.
That's why I went in journalism. I'm terrible at math.
I couldn't do math, so I was just like, is it either going to be this or nothing?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, you had a pretty cool experience, because you actually had an experience with the Detroit Free Press High School Journalism Program. Can you expound upon what you did there, Jamil?
Well, the way it worked then was that the Detroit Free Press printed all the high school newspapers from the Detroit High School. So they did this once a month. So once a month, you had to go down to the Detroit Free Press to get your high school newspaper published. That's where you put it together.
Right.
And so we as a newspaper staff would go down there once a month. And being in the newsroom, I just thought it was just fascinating. It was so high energy. It was crazy people going around cursing and yelling and shouting about these important things.
My type of atmosphere.
Exactly. The newsroom was like phenomenal. It was just so, I just felt like, man, these people are doing like such important work and important stories. Right. And I wanted a part of that. And you know, the Free Press, they were a longtime supporter of it. They went through some financial troubles recently, but they are back on board in terms of supporting high school newspapers. And from there, they had a high school apprenticeship program that was in the summer, 10 weeks. You came down to the Free Press every day, and you were assigned a mentor, and you learned about newspapers and writing and being a journalist. So I got accepted into that program, and after the 10 weeks were up, the sports department, they were looking for somebody to answer phones when the coaches called in about, you know, who did what in a game. So you write these little game summaries.
I was a preps
clerk is what they called it then.
Okay.
And so my junior and senior year of high school, on Thursday and Friday nights, I spent working in the Free Press sports department answering phones and putting together these little high school compilation stories. So, like I said, once I got hooked into sports journalism, I was there. So everything after that became about me becoming a sports writer.
So that's pretty amazing that you got that type of hands-on experience so early. So, you know, after high school, why become a Spartan?
Dirty little secret.
Oh.
I actually grew up a Michigan fan. Okay. Whoa. I deserve to be booed for that. I have since changed, and I know the error of my ways.
Right.
So
she's learned.
I've learned. So that wasn't that surprising. I grew up in Detroit. Detroit during the late 80s, early 90s, everybody was a Michigan fan because you had the Fab Five, right. Because obviously Michigan football was so successful.
Yeah.
So everybody was a Michigan fan. And my girl, my best friend from high school, she was going to Michigan. And the plan was for us both to go to Michigan. I got into Michigan. And then I got.
So you got in too.
I got wind of the fact that they were closing their journalism program. And I being at the Free Press, a lot of people there at the Free Press went to Michigan State, okay? And so they just started peppering me and brainwashing me, and it worked. And they were like, go to Michigan State because they have the much better journalism program. So I applied, got into Michigan State, and I was like, look, I may not have grown up a Spartan fan, but just comparing the two, Michigan State by far had the better journalism program, much better,
by far,
way better.
Folks.
You know, they had an accredited and nationally renowned journalism school. Michigan State did. They had the State News, which at that time was the largest college daily in the country. Mm-hmm. So it just was no reason to go to Michigan. So I told my girls, like, hey, sorry, man, I got to make a career decision here. So that's how I wound up coming to Michigan State. But let me tell you, it was kind of uncomfortable walking around campus with Michigan gear on.
Oh, my. You did that?
I did, yeah.
You did not.
I did,
so
yeah.
You were rocking maize and blue.
Yeah, because I didn't know any better. You know, it's like, I didn't really know any better. I was there for what I considered to be the right reason, which was to get an education. Not having an emotional attachment to the sports programs, that didn't mean that much to me. But by the time I left, you know, I was starting to turn the corner a little bit, but it really wasn't until much later, a little bit later in my adult life, once I got some distance between myself and the university, you step outside of sort of the bubble of Michigan, and you realize Michigan fans are really annoying.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm just like,
you should have said that. Yeah.
I don't want any part of that, you know?
Right.
So
there you
they're
go.
Annoying. And the great thing I always loved is like, if I'd be going through an airport, if I'd be out somewhere, you see somebody with a Michigan State shirt on, you know they went there. Unlike if you see somebody with a Michigan shirt on, and you're like, oh, did you go to Michigan? They're like, no. I'm like, yeah, you bought your shirt at Walmart.
Walmart Wolverines. Yeah, exactly. Walmart Wolverines.
That's who they are. And it's true. Yeah, all facts. So anyway, over time, I was like, man, forget Michigan.
There you go.
I said a little more unkindly, but that's okay.
You made the right decision.
Yeah,
I
did.
That.
I like to think
now,
so.
Now, if I turn to my left here, I'm staring at a lot of students right now who definitely want to make their dream come true, just like you have. You know, and move up the ladder to ESPN possibly, or just to be a successful sports writer, broadcaster, journalist. They have that same dream. Looking at what MSU was able to do for you in your career, what advice would you give to them?
Well, I think the main thing is that now that you have so many platforms in which you can tell stories, I think there are a lot of benefits they have now that, frankly, young journalists of my age didn't have. Having new media, being able to have so many blogs and just places, period, where their work can be seen. But all that being said, regardless of the mediums, I really hope they understand that you got to stick to the core principles about what journalism is about. Those things never change. You have to be able to tell people things they don't know.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if you tweet it, if you podcast it, if you write it, if you say it on TV and say it on radio, if you can't gather information, you're done in this business.
Exactly.
So you have to be able to report. And I know that people look at a platform like ESPN and they say, oh, I want to be on TV. Because always when people ask me, you know, hey, how do you get to work for ESPN? I want to work there. I always ask them, I always fire back the same question. Do you just want to work at ESPN or do you want to be a journalist? Those are two different things. Okay.
So true. Right.
I never, if you concentrate on being a really good journalist, the destination really doesn't matter. Like I said, I never wanted to work at ESPN. It was not a goal of mine. I'm not saying it shouldn't be a goal of yours, but if you make it about the destination, you miss the process. The process is the most important part.
Right.
And so stick to the work, you know, learn the craft, work the craft. Get good at reporting and accuracy and, you know, facts and all those other things. Because even if you look at a guy, I'm sure everybody's familiar with Adam Schefter, one of arguably the best NFL reporter in the game.
Exactly.
Adam Schefter is on TV not because he's like this, he is a good TV personality, but that's not what it is. It's because he has information.
Definitely.
And as long as you have that and are able to gather that, you'll last a long time in this business. And, you know, the other thing I'd say is that, look, experience is the currency of this business.
It definitely is.
This is not the type of profession where you can put your pinky toe in the water. You got to jump all the way in.
Right.
So You have to get internships. You have to realize what this market is really like. You know how many applications we get for internships? Tons. It's phenomenal. Thousands. We could fill this room with them. So you got to do something to stand out, because you know you have to do. You have to get the experience. I would say, especially in your immediate surroundings, get the experience necessary to put yourself on a path. If you sit in college for 4 years and you don't get an internship, trust me when I tell you, when you graduate, you will be way behind everybody else.
That is so true. So yeah. Experience is the key. Give it up for that. That's a great message, guys. Now, moving along in that same kind of conversation, Jamel, there are many out there who, you know, kind of looked at sports reporting and sports coverage as a ideally male-driven industry. You being a female in this industry, I mean, what challenges did you have to overcome, and what challenges are you still facing in that same notion?
Well, I think what you have to do early on, this applies to any journalist, but especially if you're a woman, and particularly like me, a woman of color, is that you have to develop a thick skin. There are going to be people that question why you got the job. There are going to be people that question what you know about it. Mm-hmm. So you automatically are coming into the situation, not necessarily with your immediate bosses or the people at ESPN have been extremely supportive, but just with the general perception of who you are and what you do, where you're going to have to prove more what you do know. And that, to some degree, it does get a little tiring after a while, but there's going to be a different standard for you. Like, I know if me and my co-host Michael Smith, if we're doing a show and I misquote a stat or I flub something or forget a name, then people are going to come much harder at me because I'm a woman and there's this expectation that I don't know as much. So you just have to deal with that part of it and realize that, well, at least for me, it's real simple. I'm like, hey, guess what? Every other Thursday, direct deposit. I don't care what you think. So it really doesn't matter to me.
The dollar still flows. Right?
You can hate me, like me, think I'm stupid, think I got my job because I'm black, think I got it because I'm a woman. Guess what? Every other Thursday, check still there. Doesn't matter.
Direct deposit.
It's
right?
Still there.
There you go.
So you just have to just kind of live with this idea that you will be doubted and that you'll be held to a different standard, oftentimes an unfair standard. But I will say this though, I think that the climate for women in sports is better than probably it has been. Mm-hmm. In television in particular, there's still going to be some challenges that you're going to face just as a woman. Look, I know my shelf life as a TV person is shorter,
right,
you know,
right.
than exactly. my co-host, for example. Like, usually men can grow old on TV. Doesn't happen that way for women,
right.
All right? And
exactly.
So you'll be up against a physical standard that men don't have to worry about necessarily. So there's certainly some exceptions, but generally speaking, TV can be a lot harder on women.
So with that criticism that you do receive from time to time, I mean, it's got to be hard to look at some of those comments and not fire back. I mean, sometimes you bite your tongue, but other times, don't you just want to lash out and just preach a little bit?
Trust me, every day I got to stop myself from cussing somebody out. Like, every day. Like, on Twitter especially, like, y'all lucky. I was like, ooh, you're just so glad that I love my job more than these 140 characters, because I really could come at your neck right now.
Right.
But it's but that's the nature, too, of, I think, being a journalist. You know, a lot of us, we're sort of lawyers inside, so we like to argue and debate. So that's naturally a part of what we do. But I don't get caught up in it. The social media part has made things a little edgier, a little meaner. Uh-huh. People, when I was first getting in this business, and even throughout my days as a columnist in newspapers, you would get snail mail of people going off on you. You might get 5 letters, you know, maybe in a 2-week span, and yeah, you might get agitated about it, but it wasn't this volume.
Yeah.
Social media has allowed for volume, because you got Facebook and you got Twitter and
you must block
Instagram.
A lot of people then, huh?
Oh, psh,
all
what?
The time.
It was funny because I was, when I, probably my first 2 or 3 years on Twitter, I made it a policy not to block people. I mean, I treated the more ignorant people like children. Like, eventually, when kids are high energy, like, eventually they just gonna wear themselves out, right?
Right,
so it's
exactly.
Like, yeah, whatever. But with certain stories that are more controversial, it just really brings out the fool in people. And so I just decided, like, I don't even need this on my timeline anymore. Like, I don't even need to view this. So I just block. And, you know, like recently, for example, with all this controversy surrounding Ray Rice, probably the first couple days that story broke,
yeah.
I blocked more people in 3 days than I had in probably 2 years.
Is that so?
Yeah,
wow.
It was pretty, because, you know, the conversation just gets really degrading and nasty, so.
All right. Well, that was a snippet, just a little sneak peek preview of my sit down with ESPN journalist Jamel Hill, who's a graduate of Michigan State University from the School of Journalism here at the Communication Arts and Sciences College. So you'll get to actually see that sit down. We're actually splitting up into two parts. Part one will be shown on October 16th at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. So mark your calendars, mark your DVR. You do not want to miss that episode, folks. Again, that's October 16th at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. My sit-down with Jamel Hill, as she really goes beyond just her career and also talked about domestic violence in the world of sports and so just so much more. We talked about a lot during that episode, so you do not want to miss any of that, folks. All right, well, let's hit our second break of the show. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Lions. Yes, the Honolulu Blue. They are looking very, very good right now, folks. We'll dive into them when we come back and give you our weekend winners. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Oh, mercy, mercy me.
Join us for the newsroom from the BBC, and we'll bring you a fresh and lively look at what's happening in the world. Using our extensive network of correspondents, we take you to the story as it breaks. Get the facts and hear the experts on The Newsroom from the BBC.
Starting this Wednesday on AM 870 WKAR.
Hey, what's going on, beautiful people? Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And speaking of Current Sports TV, I have to remind you all that, hey, we're back in live in full effect this Wednesday at 6 p.m. I'll be sitting down with Robert Huntoon, who is the general manager of the Capital City Stealth. Yes, that's Lansing's minor league football team. Robert Huntoon is the head of all of the operations concerning the Stealth. If you want to get a chance to meet Robert and join our Current Sports TV audience, you can do so by simply going online and signing up for free at WKAR.org. It should be a great time, folks. All right, well, let's keep this train moving with about 15 minutes left in the show and talk a little Lions. Yes, the Detroit Lions, they keep on keeping on, fending off the New York Jets. They are now 3-1 following that win on Sunday. Quarterback Matthew Stafford finished the game 24 of 34 for 293 yards, 3 TDs for him, and 1 coming on the ground. The Lions look very, very well, and I now am joined by Alex Shark, the man behind the glass, and also our fantastic intern that you heard at the beginning of the show, Jock DeWitt. Jock, you are all decked out in Lions gear, my man. You are one of the biggest Lions fans I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't missed a game in a couple years, and they sure have been fun to watch so far this year.
They have. Alex, you ready to dive into this?
More than ready. Let's go.
Well, I tell you what, looking at the Lions so far, I got to shout out this guy because, you know, with a hobbled Calvin Johnson, he stepped up tremendously, and that guy being Golden Tate. Golden Tate was great. 8 catches for 116 yards. He stepped up in big moments when the Lions needed it most. But, you know, when looking at, you know, how great Golden Tate played, the defense was certainly, it's still ranked the top in the league. I still can't believe that. I mean, I can't remember the last time. I don't think I can ever remember the last time, the Lions defense was ranked number one in the NFL. That's truly remarkable to me. And of course, the New York Jets, they were actually coming into Sunday the number two ranked defense. That has totally changed now. They are still ranked number one in rushing yardage percentage. But I tell you what, this for me, looking at this game, though, guys, I got to be completely honest. You know, I feel as though that this was a case of the Jets really being that bad, though. Even though this is probably the most complete game I've seen the Lions play all year, they were clicking on all cylinders. But let's be honest here. Is it safe to say that the Jets are just terrible? Geno Smith, don't let me get started on Geno Smith. I think Geno Smith is one of the – he's horrible. Geno Smith is horrible. Again, even though the Lions, they played great, you kind of got to take it with a big bag of salt in my eyes. Jack, what do you think?
Well, in terms of Geno Smith, I don't think it's fair to criticize him quite yet. He's only a second-year player out of West Virginia. The thing I don't understand, though, is you have a mentor like Mike Vick, who we saw a resurgence in Philadelphia after his dogfighting, sentence that he served. I would when I signed him, I would have given him the chance to start, mentor Geno Smith, and watch him, watch Geno take some things away from Michael Vick that he does well.
Yeah. Well, Alex.
The thing with Geno Smith is that regardless of what happened, did you see what happened after the game?
Oh, the cursing at the fans. We'll get to that.
Cursing at the fans.
Well, yeah.
Regardless of what happens, he's got to stay under composure. I'm not talking specifically about cursing at the fans, but as soon as he threw his interception to Slay, and as soon as you saw some of these other plays, I mean, he completely lost his composure out there on the field. I mean, he's trotting back, head down, he snaps off his strap, and you just got to keep your composure as a quarterback. I mean, as much as when Kirk Cousins threw four picks, he still had his composure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, but harping on what he does. Yeah, and I agree. I mean, it should have never crossed that line. I mean, Geno is certainly frustrated with how the game ensued. And, you know, for me, I see where you're going, Jack, but I mean, I'm a guy who calls it like it is. Right now, Geno Smith is horrible. He is horrid. Just a quick stat that is really alarming here. I may have you guys even guess this stat. The Jets right now, they have the third lowest red zone conversion percentage in the NFL with touchdowns on 4 of 15. 4 of 15 drives, folks. Now, Geno Smith's total QBR inside the opponent's 20 is horrid. If you guys had to guess Geno Smith's QBR in the red zone, what do you think it is? Just throw out a guess for me, guys.
20.3,
Jack says. Alex?
I'll say a little higher. I'll say like 30.5.
Both of you are not even close. It is 2.4. That is Geno Smith's QBR in the red zone this season, folks. The only worst QBR in the red zone is Chad Henne's, and he's at a 1.0. I mean, it is absolutely horrid. But, you know, I don't want to harp on Geno here. I want to give praise to the Lions because even so, going against the Jets team, who I think is not great, the Lions have found ways in lieu of the injuries. Because, I mean, this is still a battered-up team we're looking at here. I mean, Joint Bell, what do you have? He went out with a concussion, too, yesterday. I mean, it seems as though every week we're seeing a Lions player get injured. I kind of have to wonder at what point are the wheels going to fall off, or if they are going to fall off. But it's an unbelievable system the Lions have right now because guys are just, you know, it's just the next man, I call it. The next man is coming in, stepping up, doing their job. I mean, it's a factory mill right now. And I think it's great coaching as well by Jim Caldwell because it seemed – I saw some plays during yesterday's game that, you know, that alluded to just discipline and trying some new things. The game-winning, you know, ceiling drive, I guess you could say, you know, with the fake option when Matthew Stafford picked up the first down. I mean, that was great play calling. I mean, that's Jim Caldwell all day. It shows that these guys are buying in to Caldwell's system, and they're executing it bar none right now.
Yeah, you pretty much summed it up right there. Stafford looked great on Sunday, 24 for 34. He does a lot of things well, and we saw it in the first game against New York where, you know, if he didn't have a receiver open, he didn't try to force, he'd just throw the ball away, and that's something we saw again yesterday. And if he keeps doing that, the Lions, I don't think the wheels will fall off at all this season.
And that's something I also want to talk about. You did a great job with that, Jack, because, you know, I think it helped Matthew Stafford yesterday in a way. In a way, it never helps when you got arguably the best wide receiver in the game out. But it helped, I guess you could say, Stafford's mentality out there. He didn't need to force it to anybody because he didn't have his biggest target, Calvin Johnson, getting triple covered and having that inkling and I guess thought that, okay, if I throw it up, you know, maybe he has a chance of making a play down the field. Matthew Stafford, he took what the defense gave him in that game. If there was nothing there, again, you talked about it. He threw the ball away. And it allowed, you know, just an even keel for all of the offensive weapons that Matthew Stafford has to be utilized in a way that I frankly haven't seen in quite some time. I thought Matthew Stafford played unbelievable. Alex?
Yeah, with Matthew Stafford, one thing that I really liked about him was that he actually ran the ball more. He showed that he had a little bit more of a playmaking side to him, that he's more dual threat. And that's something that MSU's very own Connor Cook did, was running the ball more. Pat Narduzzi made those comments last week. You saw him run the ball a lot more on a, you know, third down. He needs, like, third and eight, he would go and pick up a first down on the ground. And with Matthew Stafford, too, with the rushing touchdown, he's showing he's not afraid to get in there with 350 guys on the line. I mean, that for me was a really big aspect to Matthew Stafford I haven't seen much of so far.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, looking at the proof is certainly in the pudding when you know, for me. The Lions right now, they have the second highest passing yardage percentage in the NFL, only behind the New England Patriots. They have the top defense in the NFL. They're ranked high in just about every statistical category in the league right now. They're looking really, really good. But I have to say, but because it seems as though, especially looking at last year as well, they started off very, very well. I was so high and confident as a Lions fan. I mean, you kind of have to be weary that, okay, we've seen this story before. Can they keep it up? So yeah, you can't get too high.
Remember 6-2?
Right, exactly. You can never get too high with the Lions. I understand they've had a great past few weeks here, but how long can and will it last? Isn't that the question, Jack?
Yeah, ultimately that is the question.
Definitely. All right, well, let's keep this moving. Now, 5 minutes left in the show. Again, folks, if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about on today's show as time is winding down, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. So much taking place this weekend, including the Detroit Tigers, who, just to sum it up for me, I guess to combine these two segments for me, Alex, they are my weekend winners. The Detroit Tigers, who I guess they made me look pretty good, Alex, because I predicted that they would, still, with the roller coaster type of the year they had, I still thought that they would pull out the AL Central. They did that. It was certainly right. It was certainly not easy by any means right now. But now as the playoffs are approaching, it was good to see you know, the Tigers celebrating
and throwing champagne around. People call for managers' heads all the time. As much as Brett Ausmus has made things that you don't like as a fan,
right.
You kind of turn your head sometimes. Look, it's a first year manager. He still won the AL Central. I mean, do you know many first-year managers that win their division? You got to give the guy some credit. As good as his team is, he still does a pretty good job. So props to them. My weekend winners, how about the Europeans in the Ryder Cup, man? I mean, them holding on for another year, beating the Americans. The Americans just can't close it out. And we talk about consistency. That's a consistent group right there, man.
Yeah, I think Phil Mickelson, didn't he bash one of his teammates today? I saw on ESPN. I wanted to get to that.
We'll get into it tomorrow.
But we'll definitely talk about that tomorrow because, man, Phil has been making some interesting comments throughout the Ryder Cup. But weekend winner, if you had to choose one, Jack.
Let's see. My weekend winner has got to be Mike Glennon of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Led them to their first win on that game-winning drive over the Steelers. It was a thing of beauty because the Buccaneers have not been so much fun to watch this year so far.
that is very true. I watched that game because they actually cut into that game, I think, after the Lions game, right? And they showed it. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I didn't think they would come back. But, yeah, that was one heck of a drive. That was a gutsy performance by the Tampa Bay Bucs. Good weekend winner there. All right, well, as we wrap up tomorrow, on tomorrow's show, we have a stacked one for you, folks. We'll continue our conversation. I want to dive into the Lions a little bit more. We'll also talk some MSU football. We have a jam-packed week. Again, if you want to be a part of the Current Sports TV studio audience, again, we tape this Wednesday at 6 p.m., ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'll be sitting down with Robert Huntoon, who is the general manager of the Capital Area City Stealth, which is Lansing's minor league football team. You can do so and be a part of that audience by going to WKAR.org, folks. Again, so much to talk about, so little time. But again, folks, if you still want to weigh in on it as time winds down, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. You can also tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or follow us and tweet us at our official Current Sports Twitter page, which is WKAR_sports. And, you know, again, right now, folks, everyone seems to be talking about U of M right now. The state of this team, I'm actually on the front page of ESPN right now. And they have Michigan as one of the teams on the front page. A very concerning thing for Wolverine fans and for just college football fans in general in the state of Michigan. And just where, because I believe I'm a person, even though I went to MSU, I bled green, I still bleed green and white. I think that just college football and sports in general are better when Michigan football is good. Simply put, I love the rivalry, but right now you have so much going on. Hoke is on the hot seat. What do you think will and should happen? And I'm seeing on the rumor mill, there was a lot of rumors about John Harbaugh coming out and possibly, you know, taking over as coach, or if he was even interested with the job. John and Brady are very good friends, and it seems as though he came out today and said that he is not interested in that job. Concerning his brother Jim, who knows? That he's also been rumored to be interested in the job as well. So, again, the state of Michigan football, where is it and where will it head? I want to get your thoughts on it. I'll read your comments on tomorrow's show. Facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet me at AlMartinWKAR and follow our official Current Sports Twitter page at WKAR_sports. Well, that is going to do it. All hearts and minds clear, Alex?
For now.
So much to talk. I tell you, trying to recap the weekend is certainly a tall task on this show. I could do a 3-hour show right now, right, I tell you that. Yeah. But all right,
we didn't get
folks.
To touch on Ndamukong and Sue.
No, we'll get to that as well, because it looks as though I don't think Sue is going to be a part of this Lions team next year. But we'll save all that for tomorrow, folks. Again, we are out of time, but I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of you who tune into today's show. As always, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. Yes, it's Monday, folks. There we go. All right, see you tomorrow. Da 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 da